pent-up demand on the sidelines for gold to come roaring back like this. And right. Again, it came roaring back really without, again, without any fundamental reason. There was really no reason for it to rip like, you know, I may well sell those. And I think that's a good discipline for the, because most of us obviously tend to be juniors and more illiquid. Because the time to sell illiquid stocks is when you can,
right?
When you want to.
Great advice.
And again, if I were to sell all my Ignigo thinking I was so clever I could buy it back cheaper, I would be very, very annoyed if I didn't buy it back. So when Jerome Powell is replaced, he will be replaced by a Dove. I mean, we know that. And as right. vacancies come up, it will be Doves that are appointed. So just generally, the Fed's policy will become looser. But the other thing I think we're going to see with the difficulty in I thought this would happen a little earlier this year, you know, in the fall, I was expecting to see this effect. But I think as with the huge amount of debt that the Treasury is issuing, and with major buyers, not just the foreign countries like China that everybody reads about, but also friendly countries like Japan, are actually net sellers of treasuries now for their own internal reasons, not because they don't like the US.
Adrian Day, good afternoon to you, my friend. I hope there's not a storm out like there typically is when you and I chat, but how's it going today?
It's fine, thank you, Andy. I'm going to touch wood and say I think the storm season is over.
Good. I hope it's beautiful there for you where you're at. Yeah. So gold is ripping again here. It looks like on comments or just action of the Fed. I'm attributing it to that. We had our we had been talking about a pullback. We got that, shook everybody out, but it seems like we're now back to the races. Give me your thoughts on the gold market here.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously in September, not obviously, but in September, October, gold moved just too far too fast. I think, you know, most people would agree, and it was fun while it was happening, you know, $100 every, a new $100 hurdle every day, but it was just too far too fast. And I think the reason that gold pulled back, frankly, was simply for that reason. It was just a market reason. And, you know, you ran out of buyers willing to just keep chasing it higher. People were saying, I'm going to let it come back, settle down a bit before I buy. I don't think there are any particular fundamental reasons that caused it to drop. You know, Andy, I hate to say I wish we'd had a bigger pullback because I don't. But
I do kind of, but
I mean, yeah,
really.
Well, you know,
not really.
You know what I'm getting at. This was such a shallow and short pullback. I'm not sure that we've really washed out, you know, weak hands. But what it does show you, so that's a little concerning. But what it does show us, is man, is there pent up demand on the sidelines for gold to come roaring back like this? And again, it came roaring back really without any fundamental reason. There was really no reason for it to rip like this. You mentioned the Fed, but you've still got the Fed. I don't think it's certain what the Fed is doing in December. So you've still got that sort of uncertainty. You know, you can't look at. You know, I don't see any particular fundamental reason why gold went down, nor why it recovered. It's interesting, Andy, you know, we're always looking for a reason, right? Because we're rational humans. We're always looking for a reason. People in the media, they never want to say gold went up because, well, I guess because there were more buyers than sellers today. They want a reason. But what amused me was yesterday when the U.S. market opened and gold fell sharply on the U.S. market, I read a headline that said gold down because the federal government is about to reopen. And then, A few hours later, gold up,
Right.
because if the federal government reopens, that's a positive for gold. And
Right.
I mean, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah. No, that is, I think that's such a good point. We don't know, and nor should we have all of the answers. The markets just move, if you would. I think probably the big story, as you pointed out, we had our pullback, and I think the big story is, boy, did some buyers come in.
Yep.
And we were expecting a pullback, as you mentioned. It was very sharp, but very short-lived, if you would. That has been surprising to me. But I guess what's not surprising, or what's becoming the story, is, if you would, is just how strong this move has been, and this move is, if you would, going back to a year, if you would, I would give it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the last year, as we've talked before, you've had consistent and steady outflows from the GDX, the gold mining index. Not so much a GLD, the physical gold, but the GDX, the gold mining miners. And just in the last couple of weeks before the peak on October 20th, you started to get inflows. Nothing dramatic, nothing huge, not a mania, not a flood, but you started to get those inflows. Do you know which day in the last 12 months had the largest amount of inflows into the GDX?
I don't know, but I have a feeling you're going to tell me.
October the 20th,
Wow.
the peak. I thought, I mean, you couldn't time it any better.
Wow.
Now, since then, what's interesting, as you mentioned, is you are getting inflows. Again, not huge, but you're getting inflows on this decline. And I find that very, very encouraging, because
Yeah.
I think what it means is most people felt all year. They felt it in January, they felt it in March, they felt it in June. Ah, I've missed it. I'll wait for a pullback. I'll
Yep.
wait for a pullback. And as soon as they get a pullback, the money starts flowing in.
You know, that's really good information there. And it's also, I use myself as anecdotal evidence. I took some profits in August, in mid to late August, if you would. And I was patting myself on the back 6 to 8 weeks later, near the top. When it started correcting here, I started patting myself on the back. And now I've caught myself. This was such a sharp move. I said, there's some deals here. So I started scaling in, and now I'm regretful that I even took it. Not regretful, but you know what I mean. I was like, I should have just stayed pat, just because of where things are at now, as we're talking. So
Yeah.
it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, one of the things I do is I kind of put all my stocks, when I buy them, I put them on a continuum. This is a core holding. It's
Yeah.
a Franco, an Agnico. And I don't think about selling that just because the price has gone up a bit and taking a, I mean, I might trade around the edges, but they're core holdings. Not the other extreme. I have Moose Pasture Incorporated and Consolidated Ajax. And if they move sharply, even if it's on good news, but I think they move a little bit ahead of themselves, I may well sell those. And I think that's a good discipline for the, because most of us obviously tend to be juniors and more illiquid, because the time to sell illiquid stocks is when you can, not
Right.
when you want to.
Great advice.
And again, if I were to sell all my Agnico thinking I was so clever I could buy it back cheaper, I would be very, very annoyed if I didn't buy it back.
Yeah.
If I sell all my Ajax Consolidated and I never get a chance to buy it back, huh, so what? There'll be another one.
Right.
So that's the way I look at it, Andy.
No, that's a really good way to look at it. I talked to our friend Rick Rule. This was a few weeks ago. He has held on to a lot of his juniors, but he also, as he said, I want to make sure I get this right. He de-risked a lot, and that was what he said. He certainly took some profits, but what he did with a lot of that money, he just bought the Agnicos of the world, if you would.
Yeah.
That way, he still has exposure. He's still maintaining, so for higher gold prices, but he, as in his eloquent words, is, I'm just de-risking my portfolio and going to really, really good stuff, if you would. And again, I paraphrase for him from him.
And of
So
course, Yeah, I think Rick's comments about selling a lot of his juniors have been misunderstood by a lot of people. Rick,
Right.
and I'll say this because he said it publicly, I wouldn't betray a confidence, but he said this publicly. He owns such a lot of
Yep.
some of his juniors, but he simply has to sell when the volume's there.
Yeah.
He can't afford to wait for that extra 10 or 20 or 30% and then find he can't sell.
Yeah. And to be very clear too, he holds a lot of juniors, just so everybody listening, and I want to be very clear. He's not did not come across or tell me anything bearish, if you would. Let's talk a really about what expectations take me through to next year, if you can, or what are your expectations for 26 going into the new year here?
Yeah, very, very bullish. I think the first thing to say is that in my view, and you have to have a view on this, but in my view, last month was not the top. It was not October of 2011, or gosh, I didn't even know what month it was in 1980. I should know, but I don't. Was it June, July? But it certainly wasn't a 1980 or a 2011 when the market tops for a long period of time. It was just a short-term top ahead of a correction. So if you believe that, then the issue is how long is a correction or pullback going to be? Maybe it's already over. I don't know. Maybe it's already over. But I would look at a couple of things. Number one, the rally that we saw in gold, say the last 2 or 3 years, depending on when you want to s start it, on an arithmetic basis was staggering. But on a percentage basis, do a log chart, and the rally that we saw in the last 2, 3 years is considerably less than the rally in 2011, 12, or in 1979, 1980. So that doesn't mean it has to go more, of course, but just to put it in context, I heard people talk about the unprecedented rally. This was not unprecedented. That's the first thing to say. The second thing, I think, perhaps more importantly, because that refers to price alone, but the second thing to say is that all of the main drivers of gold over the last 3 years are still intact, with the possible exception of the Chinese non-official buying, retail buying, and non-official buying in China, which did really get, which zoomed up in September and October. And that a lot of that depends on how the Chinese economy goes. And I think the jury's out on that one. But if you look at central banks, for example, we've talked about this before, I know we have, but if you look at central banks, there is nothing happening today that will make a central bank who wants to diversify their assets away from the asset controlled by a fiscally irresponsible government in the face of that government weaponizing the asset, right? So there's three factors here. Nothing has changed there. Nothing has changed at all. Except you could say the concentration is less. In 1999, central banks owned on average over 75% of their foreign assets was held in the dollar. Now that is extreme concentration. 10 years ago, it was down to 65%. This year is probably going to end up about 48%. So the question is, so it's less than it was, but the question I would ask is, if you are concerned about concentration in a single asset, you're concerned about the fiscal irresponsibility of the government issuing that asset, and you're also potentially worried about dollar weaponization, is 48% still too high? And I would say it is. So I think for a lot of central banks, that number's going to come down, continue to come down. Anyway, that would be the second thing that the drivers of gold have not changed. And then, of course, the potential is very, very high. I think we would all agree for next year, the Federal Reserve to be somewhat more loose on their monetary policy than they have been in the past. When Jerome Powell is replaced, he will be replaced by a dove. I mean, we know that. And as
Right.
vacancies come up, it will be doves that are appointed. So just generally, the Fed's policy will become looser. But the other thing I think we're going to see with the difficulty I thought this would happen a little earlier this year, in the fall, I was expecting to see this effect. But I think as with the with the huge amount of debt that the Treasury is issuing, and with major buyers, not just the foreign countries like China that everybody reads about, but also friendly countries like Japan are actually net sellers of treasuries now for their own internal reasons, not because they don't like the US. Also, regional banks are not buying. So a lot of the former big buyers of treasuries are no longer there. But of course, the issuance is continuing to go up. I think it's clear that the Federal Reserve, there's a high probability that the Federal Reserve will become that large buyer of last resort again and reinstitute QE. And you remember at the last press conference, Powell said, we've stopped QT. Well, it stops officially December 1, right? But for the last 6 months, they've only been buying $5 billion a month. $5 billion a month on a $6.5 trillion balance sheet is not an awful lot. So effectively, they've already stopped. But he announced as of December 1, no more, no more
QE.
QT.
Yeah.
And the rollover from mortgage securities, the mature, that will be rolled over into buying treasuries. That
Yeah.
sounds to me like we're getting ready for QE. That's what it
Exactly.
sounds to me.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
that's
Nothing like
wildly
it.
bullish, sorry, and that's wildly bullish for gold.
Yeah. No, it should be a very interesting, if not great year for gold and even silver. I'm already looking forward to it. Go back to July. I got some great feedback to you. We were both at Rules Investment Conference. The great Robin Kuhn came up to me and commented about that you were giving a great talk, and you were looking like Sherlock Holmes on the evaluation of gold stocks. Talk to me a little bit about that. How can listeners? I just had this question today, Andy. How do you evaluate a junior gold mining company? So, if you could put on your Sherlock Holmes hat and do that a little bit for us, we'd appreciate it. How
Yeah,
does one? How do you evaluate?
evaluating juniors, of course, is a little bit different from evaluating seniors.
Correct.
Because if we're talking about juniors, I assume we're talking primarily about junior exploration companies. We're not talking about a junior mining company,
Correct.
exploration company. So you can't look at cash flow, let alone earnings, because they don't have anything. NAVs are difficult to they can be wildly well, NPV rather, the net present value can be wildly different for different. For different analysts. So to me, the most important thing to look at overall, I mean, the absolute most important thing is the people. You know, have the people been successful in the past and preferably successful more than once? If they have, the odds are pretty high that they're going to continue to be successful.
Right.
If they have failed more than once, and they failed because of errors that shouldn't have happened, whatever that might be, then they're probably not going to be successful in the future. So people is the most important thing. Obviously, you want them to be ethical, you want them to be, to be smart, but you also want them to have been successful. The second thing, and I would say almost equal to that, is balance sheet. Does a company have a good balance sheet, sufficient cash to undertake its program for the next, 18 months? If it doesn't have the cash right now, does it have cash coming in? You know, some juniors like Origin that we've mentioned, they have a cash flowing royalty that's bringing in money every quarter. Well, so even if they didn't have a strong balance sheet, which they do, they've got nearly 20 million in cash Canadian. But they're going to be getting money in. And if they most juniors, of course, don't have a source of revenue. So if they don't have a lot of cash and they don't have a source of revenue, or they have cash just for 6 months or a year, then the next thing to look at is who are the big shareholders? Because big shareholders, whether it's Russ Beattie or frankly, whether it's Aidan Day Asset Management, if we're back in a company and they come to us for money, obviously we ask them what it's for. But we want to support these companies. We want to back them. And not just because we're philanthropic and want the Canadian mining industry to succeed, but from a purely, financial point of view. We had a company come to us, one of your favorites, and we were discussing, they had to do an equity raise. And I said, well, why don't we just ask your key shareholders to exercise their warrants early? I mean, the warrants were out of the money, but we know I would much rather exercise a warrant paying a little bit of a premium, a warrant that I'm probably going to exercise at some point in the next 3 years before it expires anyway. But I'd much rather exercise early and put money in the treasury than have them dilute. And you look at Ross Beattie. Ross Beattie is always, if he's a big shareholder, he'll lend the money, he'll buy do private placements in the company. Again, for the same reason, you want to support the companies and not see excessive dilution.
Great advice. So if you don't mind, what are a couple or a few companies that you do like, and you can go just really to developers to explorers that you like?
Oh, you don't want me to mention Agnico?
As you've done every time.
I'm going to look at the screen. There's a lot I like. There's a lot I like. Even though the prices have gone up, some of them represent still incredible value, and they represent better value at the higher gold price, of course. You can have that leveraged effect. But even if the gold price is up 50%, your value, the value of the company, is much more than 50% higher. I think Equinox is just a really great price, a really great company, and a great opportunity. Equinox, of course, had problems with, first of all, cost overruns and delays on building, constructing Greenstone, the new mine in Ontario. And then once it was finally built and the first gold pour, they had a really difficult time ramping up. And because of those two things, they were forced to raise more money. So they wound up a year ago with a mine that was having difficulties and with a bad balance sheet, 1.4 billion, I think, in debt. Since then, of course, they've merged with Calibre. They've got a new CEO who came from Calibre. The last 2 quarters now look as though the mine. A mine's problems are never totally fixed, right?
It's
Mining's a
mining.
difficult business, but it looks as though the ramp up is now going smoothly. It looks as though the mine is now operating smoothly. That means we now have cash flow out of the mine. Instead of it being a money pit, it's now generating money, which means they can now start paying down their debt. So the two major problems are being solved. And of course, with Calibre, they also got a new mine, the Valentine mine. So I think even though the stock price has tripled more or less in the last, this year from those depths, on a value basis, I think it's got a lot of room to go. And, just as a tangent, if I may, two things on that. That story is interesting because that's often a good place to look for good value in a strong market. Where you've had companies that have had problems, and those problems look as though they're being fixed. That's
Good
often
point.
a good place to look for good value. And
That's a great point.
then the second thing I'll go along with that is that after it looks like the problems are being fixed and the stock doubles or triples, don't think that's all there is to it, because it may well have been, as in the case of Equinox, extremely depressed at the bottom because of the sentiment. Anyway, I won't talk so much about every other one, but there's a lot I like. Dakota, Bob Quartermain's company. I'll call it Bob Quartermain's company. He's the CEO. And in Dakota, exploring and developing around the old Homestake mine. I think on a peer basis, that one is very undervalued. It's in the US on private land, so that's all good. Being fast track, permitting won't be a problem. The only potential problem would be metallurgy, but they are working very hard on that right now. And there are mines in the area that would suggest the metallurgy can be fixed. Just going down the list, my gosh, that was a deep. If we go, our favorite Heliostar, still good at this price. I mean, when you think of what Charles Funk has done, the company he's built in Mexico, the company he's built, multi-mine company with minimal dilution, and there's a lot further to go, of course. So, I mean, there's lots. I could carry on. I'm happy to carry on.
Yeah, just give me a couple more. That's great. Just for all the record, I am an investor of Heliostar, and they're also a sponsor of the website, just full disclosure. But I think the world of Charles Funk, and I think of the world of the project.
Yeah, and I should just say that if I recommend something as a good buy, just assume that I've bought it. And you can also assume I'm not going to sell it if I'm recommending it, obviously. I think Metalla is just a great buy. Metalla, the royalty company, is shifting. It's really at that turning point where the cash flow is going to start coming in the next 24 months, and some of their really big projects that are 7 and 10 years out, as each year goes by, they come closer, which means the company has milestones that are met, which means they can talk about something and other people talk about it. So just to give an example, I mean, if you look at Metalla, a lot of the other companies will look at, they'll say how cheap they are compared with their peers, and they'll do it purely on a cash flow basis. And on a cash flow basis, Metalla does look expensive, one of the most expensive of the juniors. But if you look at it on an asset basis, it's selling right now on the analyst consensus NAV, NPV, it's trading at about 1x, which is not bad for a royalty company. But I personally think the NPV is dramatically understated. And it's understated because, as we all know, Friedland's talked about this, and many other smart people, Brian Dalton at Altius, many of the smartest people in the business have talked about how analysts will understate the value of long life assets. Because essentially, once you get to year 7 or 8, they're counting nothing. The cash flow is nothing on the NPV. If you do an 8% discount, it's nothing. Well, you and I both know, I don't know what it is worth, but I know one thing, Andy. Cash flow 20 years out is not worth nothing. It's not worth nothing. And so you look at a company like Metalla, and let's say Taca Taca, which is a big copper project in Argentina, owned by First Quantum. It has been, the estimate for when it might start producing is, 9 to 10 years from now. And so analysts are giving very, very little value for that. But as the timelines get closer and as the milestones are achieved, whether it's, a pre-feas, a feasibility, a construction decision, as all these timelines get achieved, then that project starts to get a lot of value. And the other thing I mentioned that's a little bit not unique, but the other thing that's really important about Metalla, most of their big projects, whether it's Copper World, Hudbay's Copper World, which just brought in a partner to enable them to finance a project because they didn't want to do it themselves, So is whoever's Copper World, which might start production revenue in 2028, or whether it's Taca Taca, all of their big assets, or Côté, of course, is a huge one, Gosselin, which is, Gosselin is the deposit adjacent to Côté. They're all owned by other royalty companies as well. World Wheaton owns Copper World, Côté, Franco just bought a 8.5% royalty, a royalty, 8.5% royalty on Côté. And at their last conference call, but the one before, so 3 months ago, I think Paul Brink, CEO of Franco, I think he spent about 20 minutes, because obviously he had to justify why they spent $1.4 billion on a royalty. I think the most expensive royalty ever. And he spent about 20 minutes talking about the potential for Côté Gosselin. Well, don't tell me that doesn't rub off on Metalla, which also has a much smaller royalty on Gosselin. So anyway,
Interesting.
I could keep going.
Yeah, do you, give one more if you would. Just one more that you're looking at, or you that you own that you think is worth it.
Well, for patient investors, I've mentioned this one before, but I still like Midland MD. It's a prospect generator in Quebec, so good jurisdiction, good people, good technical people, great partners. Whether it's an alliance or an option, they're partnered with RTZ, who's looking for lithium, BHP, who's looking for copper zinc. I mean, basically, BHP is looking for another Voisey's Bay. That's what they're looking for. Agnico, Osisko, or ORV. No, Osisko Development, Agnico, SOQUEM, Barrick. I mean, this is a who's who of the mining business, and they're all partnered, either alliances or option earnings. And I think the truth is, I've said this before, I know you and I have certainly talked about this. A prospect generator model only minimizes your risk, doesn't ensure success. You've still got to make that discovery, right? Whether you're drilling one project with $100,000 in your pocket, or whether you're, a company like Midland with multiple partners, you've still got to have that discovery. And I think the truth is that Midland has just not had that discovery yet. But if you look at the in terms of partners they've got, to earn in, just to give you an example, to earn in Rio Tinto, to earn into their lithium project, the project for lithium, Rio Tinto has to spend over, are you ready for this?
Yeah, go ahead.
$1 million before they earn in. So in the last 2 years, they've already spent over 20 million. So we're talking real money with real partners. And the way I would put it is that Midland is as well positioned for success as any exploration company I can think of. And if they do have a success at discovery is not guaranteed. But if they do have success, because the stock, apart from this year, the stock has been pretty weak for the last 5 years, it has moved from weak hands to strong hands. If you look at the share registry, it's now in strong hands. So you get that discovery, and it's going to move very, very well.
Got it. Adrian, I think we'll end on that. You're a busy guy, but I want to thank you for coming on. If people want to do business with you or talk to you, how do they find you and how do they do business with you?
Well, first of all, if people want to do business with us, I should first of all say your readers are very smart people.
Yes,
But
they are.
the website is go to adrianday.com, and you can find a lot of information there and about our managed accounts. We do managing global accounts as well as dedicated gold accounts, and all of our accounts are individualized. Or sorry, all of our accounts can be individualized. We don't manage to a model. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but we don't manage to a model like a lot of managers do.
Got
So
it.
it's all there.
Got it. All right. I'll put all of this in the show notes below on both the YouTube, Spotify, and Apple channels. I want to thank you so much. It's always a pleasure talking to you, Adrian.
Well, thank you very much, Andy. I enjoyed it.